The talk tonight, the Friday night inner space talk, is caring for the mind. And actually, it's not a talk. It's going to be a conversation on positive mental health. And I think all of us, I don't know anybody who hasn't had to check in with themselves during this year. And for us in the UK, it's been a year where we've mostly worked from home, and been working on our own, connecting on Zoom, connecting with families on online, but mostly on our own or the people we live with. And so mental health, major priority, definitely. But we're going to have Carolyn and Pamela share on a couple of things. We've asked them to explore with us why our feelings are valid, how we can be kind to ourselves, and why it's okay not to feel okay. And then, what are the ways to care and strengthen our mental well-being? Pamela is joining us from Melbourne, Australia, and she's a counselor, facilitator, and educator in Australia. She's been a student of the mind for more than 4 decades. She doesn't look it, right? But there you are. And Caroline, for those of you who may have heard her before, last year we had Caroline join us, but we're very lucky that she could join us again this evening. And Caroline is a consultant, writer, speaker, working in organizational change and transformation, both in Latin America and Australia. You'll be a, although Caroline and Pamela are going to be having the conversation, there will be an opportunity after the short meditation for you to put your questions to them. So all you need to do is there's a link on your email which says questions and answers. Just click on that and send your questions through. Those questions will come through to me and I will put your questions to Pamela and Caroline. So all that is left to say is thank you very much, and over to both of you. Thank you. I'll speak to you later.
Thanks, Artie. It's
See you,
lovely to
Artie.
be here. Good. All right. So, Pammy, caring for the mind.
Big topic.
Big topic, yeah.
It's a very big topic, yeah.
Could I begin by declaring something that this whole, framing that Artie just put about, feelings and it's okay to not feel okay. And I want to say straight up that I think I ran away and avoided feelings because they're uncomfortable, a lot of them, for a huge part of my life. And you are without a doubt the person who helped me to not be afraid of my feelings anymore. So I'm feeling very that we're in the right place, that people who have joined around this topic have joined a really, wise space for exploring this idea, because I remember very clearly you helping me to not feel afraid of my feelings. And afraid of, obviously, not of, oh, maybe of the very fabulous ones. Sometimes they were a bit scary too, like it's not going to last. So don't get too happy, kind of weirdness. So, yeah, I think that learning to care for one's own mind and heart, I think they're both together for me. And embrace the energy field of feelings and know that they're not fixed. It's not like they're happening to me. I have an opportunity to learn to master them, to be with them, to learn how to understand them, decode them, and become free from their grip. So, yeah, I just want to put that in up front because I'd still be running, I think,
Oh,
if
that's
it
so
wasn't
sweet. I mean, that sounds like I'm an expert. I'm still dealing with my array of emotions and feelings as well. I think, you know, some of us have had some kind of trauma in our early years, recognize that I got to get a handle on this. So for me, it was that, you know, the reason why I became interested is because I was traumatized as a kid. And so I had a lot to work with. And, you know, as I moved through my life and matured, I started to get more tools and techniques to help me deal with my intense emotions. And I think friendship is a great place to explore that. And I think you and I began our friendship, and it was a bit wobbly at first when we got to know each other. And, you know, that was because we had sort of similar histories, if you like. You know, I think both our fathers were good drinkers, and there was a lot of anger in the house. And so people who have been through trauma develop lots of different defense mechanisms, and they can often, you know, become the things that interrupt relationships and make, you know, good relationships go bad. So I think there were periods in our relationship where I sensed, oh, you know, she has similar kind of defenses, similar kind of running away habits, or, you know, reacting aggressively habits in when we triggered each other. So it was a great exploration. Yeah. So thank you for also going there and really being able to go the distance in the scary moments of friendship. That's why I consider you one of my dearest friends, because there's not many areas we can't go together in the sense of talk deeply about uncomfortable things. I think when you do become unafraid of emotions, you do learn to have uncomfortable conversations with yourself and with others, which then opens the way for newness in your experience.
Yeah.
So,
wow. So even within what you just said, I think there's a stack to unpack, because there's a friend of mine who's in the UK, and she's a researcher and working with UNESCO at the moment on a big project around trauma and healing. And her research shows that the whole world is traumatized, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we might think it just happens to people who've been, you know, who've grown up in abusive situations, or have had, you know, certain things that have happened to them through time, whether it's war or, you know, but generally some kind of violence. But she's saying that the research shows that all of us have, you know, we're growing up in violent times, and we're all in some way or another traumatized. And so then we would, if we don't know that that's the case, we've got these sort of coping mechanisms, because you have to get on with life, right? And if we look at last year, it was traumatizing for so many people. You know, we're creatures of routine. Even if we don't like routine, mm-hmm. we still, you know, we get up, we go to work, or we, you know, whatever we do in the day. And I know for me last year, I was so used to for a long time being part of community. And last year I was completely alone. Luckily, I think we were very blessed to have this kind of technology, because imagine if we hadn't been able to just jump on and see each other, and we were just literally alone. I think many of our human family, we would have really struggled. I think people struggle anyway, because touch is a really important thing too.
Yeah, and I do think young people really took it hard, because, I mean, even though they're good at all this technology, you have so many dreams when you're young. You think, okay, I'm going to go out, I'm going to find love, I'm going to expand my work world, or I'm just going to go out and groove to music or whatever it is. And, you know, young people really, it was the first big sort of social world event for them. And even I was interviewing, I think, your niece, she's at uni. And, you know, this is the first time she's actually gone to uni to be and talk with people, and she was, you know, a little bit nervous. And and then you have the older generation who have kind of got a bit of resilience, because they've been through the war and the Spanish flu, and I was really looking to them and thinking, wow, yeah, they have that resilience, even though they must have suffered a lot of loneliness at the time. But the good things that happened in the COVID experience for me was, I live in a place where these beautiful old parks, and because we were allowed to go out for 2 hours, you know, exercise, I saw families and you know, dads taking their kids and people using the park. In fact, it was my little secret park. And then I was like, oh, what are all you people doing here? You know, because I do my hatha yoga in the park. And so I noticed that people started to appreciate nature, which brings me to one of the points about well-being, is that if you like, you know, we are like our self is like a house. We've got many rooms to ourself, but most of us just use the first two, three, four rooms in the house, you know, the kitchen, the lounge room. It's where we're all our habits, as you expressed so well. But we have all these hidden aspects of ourself. If we give them an opportunity and a chance to breathe, it really does develop, you know, the mental health side of things. So what I saw in the COVID experience is that people were using aspects of themselves that they'd basically not used for years, like creating a picnic. Like, you know, taking the kids into nature rather than just getting them to all go to different classes. Or at the beach, you know, this is a beach that hardly got used. People were, it was like highways of people walking up and down the beach. And now it's carried on after the COVID shutdown. So it's like nature has really given people an experience. They forgot that it feels good to be in nature. So, you know, there's a lot of great things out of this experience as well as the struggle.
I remember reading Doris Lessing book called Shikasta many years ago, and it, you know, of course it's an invented world, but it's really she's just looking at our world. And she talked about these like I don't know if they were called cities, but like cities where there's buildings and concrete and she said and people lose a sense, they start to go crazy. And she described the people, and it's just like us on a Monday morning, everybody rushing to work in the trains and knocking into each other and getting upset and you know and they speed up and get crazy. And then when they go outside of these areas and they go into the non-built up areas, it's like they return to some other rhythm and to something that's more natural. And we were talking about this the other day. This idea, people go, oh yeah, I've got to go to nature. Nature makes me feel peaceful. And I think I always like to ask, well, why? What happens? Because I think that peacefulness is our actual real nature. It's why we want it. It's why we go, oh God, that feels so good. Oh, it's like landing back in yourself again, finally, after being, you know, a refugee in a different land for a long time. And that land of craziness. And you don't know you're crazy because everyone else around you crazy too.
You don't. You know, in Japan,
But
they call
I
it.
just want to say the thing
Oh, yeah.
about nature, you know, we call it nature. And I think that's because it's natural. And when we go into it, it reflects back to us what is natural, like energetically, the order of things, the rhythm of things. And it's like we just tune into that. It's the same when you're around someone who's really peaceful, you go, oh, that feels really good. So, yeah, go into the Japan story because I think it
Oh
leads
no,
in there.
I just want to add to that is that you know that there's this thing called forest bathing. And I know that when you came down here, I mean we'll get into some feelings things in a minute, but I know that when you came down here, it was raining, it was quite cold, but we both decided, no, we're going in the ocean. And the ocean was wild and there was no one on the beach, but we were like, when we got in there, it was just so exciting and amazing. And I thought to myself, so many times you say, no, it's too cold, no, it's this, no, it's that. Or riding my bike in the rain, I think, oh, but I'll get wet. But when I do it, I go, it's just incredible. I feel like I'm absolutely in my element, you know.
There's a saying that says some people walk in the rain and others just get wet. And I love that because it's like you go, wow, this is an experience. And I mean, I think there's something about training our minds outside of our beliefs as well, that we believe that, oh, you can't, you know, walk in the rain or cold is bad. Or like I've started a practice a very long time ago now that at the end of my hot shower, I have a cold shower, icy cold. And sometimes I'm in places like where I am now where it gets really cold and we don't have heating really like in England, which, you know, not everybody has, I'm sure. But you know, the it can get, that water is icy. And I've trained my mind, even though some days I go, no, I think I'll just stay with the hot shower because it's nice and cozy. I go, no, no, cold shower, you love it. And I've talked myself into it being as delicious, as pleasurable, as beautiful, as supportive for my whole well-being as a hot shower. And it is, but it took some training of my mind to get out of a belief. And I think that's the same with when we're caring for our mind, we often believe the rubbish that's going on in there, you know, like the way that we talk to ourselves is so unhelpful at times, and we believe it's true, and it's just patterns of thought that really are just patterns. They're not truth.
Yeah, and that leads quite well into this idea that, you know, we believe we are our thoughts. Something that I started to understand when I was studying psychology is that there are certain different types of thought traps that you can get caught in. You know, and I think the catastrophizing one is one of my favorite habits myself, you know. Like when we were going into the ocean, I was like, oh, it's too cold, I can't go in. No, what am I doing? It's freezing. And look, there's a rip. I don't know, I could be taken out to sea. And, you know, there you were bouncing around in the waves, not in the same thought process I was in. So which leads me to this thing that I've been practicing lately is that when I wake up in the morning, I sense the atmosphere of my mind. That's the first thing I do. I tune into my mind and my body. And I ask, you know, myself how I'm feeling today and what's happening in the mind. And I'll notice if there's kind of a little bit of a rhythm of sort of, could be this sort of sniff of doubt. Maybe it's about work or a client and I'm trying to work through something. You know, so I'll start companioning that sort of doubt rather than squash it down. I'll take it on a walk and I'll say, tell me about, what are you doubting, Pamela? What's going on there? And you know, I may even sort of, you know, write a note down and run that doubt with my supervisor if I speak to her later in the day or something like that. So this idea that I am not my doubt, doubt comes, I explore it. What is it? What is it trying to say? Is there something in it, or is it just an old habit that I need to actually readdress and move forward with? So the mind is a kind of interesting world, and there are different sort of thinking traps that we can get caught in. And I think it's a big study, the mind, but, you know, one of the major things that I would like to express today is that we are not our thoughts. They are instruments that we work with to make our life what we'd like it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I love this idea of waking up. And last year, I think I shared this when I was on here, because it became a very new practice for me, even after many years, you know, 30 years of meditating as a first practice in the morning. But this sense of, like, when your eyes first open, you have a choice in that moment. And for me, I really started practicing that it doesn't matter what's happening in the day. So, you know, I've been used to living in places with very, very blue skies, really blue sky, a lot of sun. And I know that makes a difference. Someone said here, you know, so does going in nature help with mental health, positive mental health? Yes, it does. And also, you know, blue skies, big blue, open blue skies also are helpful if you've got them. They're lucky. But you're not doomed if you're not. And I'm living in a place now that is often cloudy and overcast. And I've just decided that I wake up in the morning and I say good morning to life. You know, I realized I had this whole kind of way of living growing up means up to last year, you know, still growing up, of growing up, that it was me almost not against life, but sort of against life, you know, that separate from me. And I realized last year that my most intimate companion in in this journey is life itself. It's an energy. And why would it be against me? It's like it's invited me in. It's me and life together. It's an energy that it's a context, it's a space. Why would it be against me? It wouldn't. So I kind of started to shift that and just decide whatever the day is like, it's a good day. You know, I would what and so I wake up and I'd have a habit of waking up feeling a little like, oh, you know, no, get up. You know, especially if it was getting up early, oh, get up. And I go, no, I can shift this. And I get up and I'd open the blind, and if it was dark, wouldn't matter. If it was coming light, I'd go, oh, it's a great day. And I consciously move myself into deciding that, rather than is the sun shining or is it not? Is it raining or is it not? Therefore, it's a good day or it's not. No, whatever it is, I'm deciding it's going to be a good day. And that doesn't mean that things wouldn't come and knock me about. You know, someone's put a question in here about, is it good to talk when you've got uncomfortable feelings with friends? I think, you know, you can't just dump on your friends all the time, because that's not fair. Friendship is more than just, you know, unloading. But if I didn't have a couple of really close friends who, when things do get a bit shaky for me, and I can't manage them with my own management system, for me, it's a wonderful thing to be able to count on my friends to sort of listen and sometimes give me advice and sometimes just listen.
I think that's a great point. Can I pop in with that one, Cassie?
Yeah.
Because it's such a beautiful question, questioner, because sometimes our friends aren't supportive and don't know how to help and actually haven't traveled into places within themselves that can handle what we're presenting sometimes. And I know that Cassie and I, we have a little thing we do, which I say, Cassie, I'd like a therapeutic friend right now, which just gives her a hint that she's going to become the listener. And if I want her to give feedback, I'll ask her. But we had a conversation about that, because sometimes actually you just need a chance to talk about an uncomfortable sensation in the day that happened between you and somebody else, or that you're having reoccurring suffering from maybe a childhood injury, emotional injury. And in that case, you really do need to pick the people you talk to, because one, you know, you need a safe place. And I was going to talk about this a little bit later on in the talk, that yes, often we can wake up and think, yeah, I'm going to have a good day. But some of us may have, you know, very depressive experiences where even though no matter how much we force ourselves, that feeling or that chemical is pretty present and I'm unable to shift it. You know, that's when, you know, you can explore things like what's that compassionate thing that Sarah does?
Self-compassion.
Self-compassion, thank you, yeah. There are lots of beautiful courses out there where you can really learn to kind of companion, you know, those wounded spaces that some of us have. And I'll put my hand up to that I've worked with several wounds along my life that occurred in my childhood that I now have a very good handle on and that I have a great compassion for, and that they don't rock my boat anymore. But it took a long time to actually work through that and get that to that space. And I've also gone and seen therapists at different times, which have been so helpful and useful. And I always say to anybody who asks me, you know, if you have a little bit of cash to spare and a problem, you know, put it in the right place, go and see somebody who can help companion you through developing skills around supporting those injuries. Because mental health has as many injuries as physical health, and we don't ever talk about it in that way. So mental health is really just, I have an old injury that keeps coming back occasionally, just like the tennis elbow. You know, let's look at sensitivity. You know, if I feel rejected from a group of friends, and that injury of rejection is so deep that it makes me sort of stay home for 3 days and feel bad. You know, that's no different than the tennis elbow, which doesn't allow me to go and play tennis for 3 weeks. Yeah. Why would we put shame and angst around our wounded self. So I'm really so interested in changing and shifting this idea about our wounded self in the world, and that it's a beautiful place to hang out. Once you realize that you have an injury and you spend time thinking how I'm going to support this injury in my life, you meet the most beautiful friends. Once you start making people who talk deeply about themselves, if you meet a beautiful therapist, it's somebody who's just like your local doctor, who's going to be someone you can call on again and again. And I, you know, I've actually called on a therapist when a situation has come up. I've thought, no, I need to talk to somebody who's clever and who has compassion about this issue, not a friend, because I need to feel really free in that conversation. Sometimes with your friends, you know, you can't talk about certain things because, you know, it's just,
yeah,
it's difficult.
Well, and you need someone who's skillful sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
that's the thing. There was something you said. I think in all of this that I'm hearing, there's such a commitment to being responsible, not in the heavy way, but in a liberating way, that responsible for whatever is happening inside of me, my feelings. When you talked about being rejected from a group or something, and I thought, yeah, it has, everything has such, you know, like the dropping the stone in the pond and the ripples. You know, I remember that I was so chronically fearful of rejection that if it even there was a hint that I was going to be rejected, because, you know, I'm not someone who fits in easily in terms of, I'm not a conservative person. I'm a bit like you. I look more conservative maybe than you, but I'm wild out. I don't fit inside, you know, the sort of systems of the world so easily. So if I felt like I would be rejected, I would reject first. And I didn't know that I was doing that, but I go, yeah, I don't really like, I'm not interested. But actually my little heart was going, oh, you know, and it was yet another excluding. And you know, this habit of isolating, which is a defense mechanism to isolate oneself, you know. And so I had to work out, what do you do in that case? And this chronic sort of feeling of not belonging or wanting to belong and not. And I remember one of the very first, in the beginning of my self-awareness journey, if you like, life waking up, I heard it in one of the teachings, don't wait for someone to make you belong to them, make the whole world belong to you. And I went, that's so beautiful. Stop kind of pushing things separate, a bit like life is not separate. Others are not separate either, you know. And if someone else is going through, you know, acting out badly, often we just criticize and judge them. But there's that beautiful saying from Alcoholics Anonymous that says, there but for the grace of God go I, you know. And it's this sense that any of us could behave in certain ways given certain circumstances.
This
and
is
we
my
do.
Juiciest, yeah, this is my juiciest favorite topic because
okay, let's go.
Yeah, I like to sort of call it the operating system. Once you've worked out that you've got a little bit of a glitch in your operating system, and you said, I reject before I can get rejected, you know, that whole defense mechanism.
Used to.
I beg my pardon.
Thank you.
So there's a little moment within the operating system where you can do the pause. So, for example, I'll give you an example of what happened to me. I'll do a bit of self-revelation here, is that I'm a dyslexic. So I never passed any exams at school when I was at school. I left at 14 years old basically felt ashamed and became quite clever at hiding the fact that I couldn't fill in forms and spell correctly. So I'd go, I'll take it home and I'll send it to you or whatever. I just used to hide all of that. And then I thought, oh, look, I've got to get a degree. So I went to school and did a degree in filmmaking, became a filmmaker for a while, but I didn't have to do essays for that. And then later on, I thought, no, I need something a bit more juicier to do. So I started a counselling degree. And I remember the first essay I did was like a scrape-in pass because I presented it verbally and handed in the paper. The second one I did was a fail. She came up to me, the teacher came up and said, look, I'm sorry, I can't pass this. If you can do it again, I'll give you a pass, but otherwise you've failed. So I took the paper home, I cried. I thought, oh, here is this old monster, you know, this injury come back to taunt me. I started to watch my mind. I started going to, I'm going to swear, she's a bitch, she's not a good teacher, you know, lousy. And I started to observe how I was projecting the problem outside of myself and wasting time because I only had a week to do this essay. And I said to myself, and it was a big turning point in me understanding how my defense mechanisms of blame and projecting outside myself have stopped me from moving forward in my life, have relationships, have, you know, denied myself experiences because of fear around this issue. So I said to myself, stop it, Pamela. This is a moment and you've got to make it worthwhile. I rang a friend of mine, Niall, who is a beautiful Irish friend, many years, and who happened to be a counsellor as well. So I knew that he could handle this distraught little 14-year-old who had never really freed herself. And he said, yeah, don't worry, I'll come over and help you now. And he came over. And I cried 1,000 years, releasing all that sneaky, secretive person who'd been hiding all these years that she can't spell. And I don't know how to have an academic argument. I didn't even know what it was or how to do it. And he just said, oh, don't wait a minute. Now, look, now, let's just look at this. And he was so kind, so tender. And I got what the story was. I was able to put it together. I had another friend who edited my spelling, handed it in and passed, you know, and the history goes is that I not only passed, I started getting credits and then I started getting, what is it, honours or?
Distinctions and high distinctions.
Yeah, yeah. So in the end, I went, oh, wow. And so that shifted the whole story that I told myself. I'm no good, I can't do these things. And then it became, if I make effort, I can do it. And then slowly that opened the door for me understanding so many of my defense mechanisms and shifting the way I interrelated with a lot of things in the world, with me and the world, really. And so you just have to watch yourself and you'll see your own little defense mechanisms acting out. You make that little space in between you and the reaction. And then you plan what it is you really want to do, what you feel you can do, and then you just add that to it and things change. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, look, Pammy, I think that for me this has been the biggest shift in my life was from circumstances are in charge of everything to I'm actually in charge of everything. So the circumstances can even still look really pretty heavy duty.
Yeah.
And can feel against me at times. And, you know, we've talked about this. Our family of origin environment is often where all of our patterns get triggered as well. So if we, you know, during lockdown, we had to spend time with people who are from our family of origin. It can trigger our old unhealed stories because, you know, when we're little kids, just to, you know, have someone even not violent but just ignore us, you know, because they're busy can be such a kind of pattern trigger that just says, I'm not good enough or I'm not loved or which we don't even, you know, of course that's not, well, maybe it's true, but it's probably not true. But the interpretation is at a deep energetic level where I then internalize that and I grow up distorted or my path is crooked because I believe I'm not seen by the person who's most important to me. Therefore, I'm not worthy of being seen or, you know, and it's so unconscious. But once, you know, and that then is what I create in the world around me. I attract and I interpret more and more over and over those scenes now where everybody leaves me or nobody, da da da. And I've got these stories which grew from some key moment, which was probably a misinterpretation from my innocent space of some adult who was very busy. And of course, many traumatizing other things are more damaging than that, where there's abuse and all of that. I'm not saying it's just simple things. Having also grown up with some of those things in my own life, but there's some patterns that in myself I get to change, and it changes everything. It's like I've moved to a new country. Everything's different. The environment, the view is different. The culture is different, the people, and it's nothing to do with the circumstances. It's all to do with the operating system, as you called it. I mean, you know, we've only got a couple of minutes. We've got three more minutes before we have to swing over into a bit of meditation, kind of, you know, connecting to that sort of shift. So what's important for you in this moment?
I wanted to say something when you're talking about what you're saying, you know, the family of origin story. What I'm finding when I'm helping people is that because you're little, you can't process what's happened to you because you don't have a developed mind that can be the witness to what happened. You just actually think, oh, well, that's my life and that's it. And then that determines who I become.
Yeah. But actually, so that's key, the witness.
So you've got to be a witness. But also what happens if you don't process those things, that the big wounds as the child, they will come up as what they call the nervous breakdown, you know, where you just really, things are just bubbling over and you can't control them and it's too much for you. So it is really good to be proactive, you know, in an easy and light way, not in an intense way, but, you know, just in an easy, light way, is that if something comes up for you, just grab a pen and paper and write it down and say, I'm feeling this is a reoccurring thing in my life, that I feel rejected, or I reject others, or I'm too needy, or I'm easily agitated. And you'll find that story will weave its way back to a story that happened. And then there are processes you can do to actually help move that along. And I think we're going to practice some little bit of meditation around mindfulness, just in being able to sense your body. Because there was one thing I wanted to talk about, which is the vagus nerve, which is something I'm just exploring at the moment. Mm-hmm. That's the nerve that creates flight, fight, and freeze. And, you know, when we're traumatized as a young person, often we can get re-triggered in our later life, and the body goes into this flight, fight, or freeze. So we feel that we're under some kind of attack. And that's why the defense mechanisms come, you know, your feeling of wanting to reject somebody, or mine wanting to blame the teacher. That's the kind of vagus nerve saying to the body, quick, you're under threat. Attack, you know, attack before you get attacked. It's at that moment where you need to do the breathing and the meditation. So I think, Carolyn, if you could take us into a beautiful meditation which shows us how to breathe space into that little gap between the trigger of an old wound and that defense mechanism being acted out into the world, that would be great.
Okay. All right. I'll do my best. So I think this thing about coming to, it's okay to not always feel great. I think however we feel is how we feel. Excuse me. But it's not who we are. I think they're really key points as we go in, and that this witness, the observer, the willingness to just breathe and bring some spaciousness in, which gives you a little bit of distance from the energy, because it's a journey of energy, right? That this energy is coming up, it's taking over, it's whirling around, and it consumes you, and you dive in or you give it some distance and observe it. And I think that's the fundamental thing we're talking about here. So there's a practice, a breathing practice, and different people have different numbers depending on how good their lungs are. But the idea is that you breathe in. This is like such ancient wisdom. You know, my mum used to go, take a deep breath and count to 10, you know, before you react. And it's like we know that. So we'll just take a few minutes, 3-4 minutes now to practice that. So an easy one is that you breathe in for 4, you hold for two. And then if you breathe out for six or seven, what you're doing is you're triggering your nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, to go from the freak out back into restore and recover, rest, restore and recover. So we just begin with, excuse me, that breathing in for four, and you try and breathe down into the diaphragm, or not from the diaphragm, the lower part of the lung. So breathing in, two, three, four, hold, two, out, two, three, four, five, six, in, two, three, four, hold, and then breathe out for the count of six. And as you're doing that, at first, if you're in a flurry, it's just put your focus on the breath. That's all. Focus on counting in, hold, and counting out. Nothing more to be done, nothing to achieve. And as you're breathing in and you get some space, it's like the breath opens up the emotions and the tension within, and it gives you spaciousness. And all you're looking for is that a little bit of shift in energy. And have this sense that you could step back outside of that field of energy just for a moment. It's like you take a step back behind the bubble and continue to breathe. Breathe normally now, but allowing there to be more spacious breathing. And as you step back, feel the relief. And that's all you're looking for, is just relief in the first instance. And if you want to do a big sigh, that's good too. And as Pamela's stretching, that's also a good thing. To move the body, it gets very tight and tense and patterns of holding. So it's good if you move your body as well. And this is about being masterful of your whole world, your physical, energetic, emotional, your mind. It's a really basic thing, but it makes the world of difference.
Thank you, Carolyn. That was beautiful.
Okay, here.
Oh, there she is.
Thank you. There's lots of people saying thank you so much. And someone's written, this is pure gold. One of the best talks I've listened to with Inner Space. These ladies rock.
Thank you.
So I think that's great feedback. But here's the first question I'd like to put to you. Sometimes my inner voice has says to me that you're so very precious. You're capable of doing anything that you want. Other times there is only darkness, and I'm feeling like I'm nothing and I can't do anything. What is this?
That is very normal.
Yeah.
That is something that all of us have. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I have learnt to companion both of those beings in myself, both those, you know, you can sometimes you can give them a name. You know, you could say Cheryl is the downer girl and Elizabeth is the sweet person who absolutely knows how to live this story. I often get them together. I get Elizabeth to go and get Cheryl and say, Cheryl, come on, darling, I'm going to take you for a walk. We're gonna walk down to the beach or this, you know, wherever. And I want to hear why you're so down, you know. Often those parts of ourselves are the unnourished, uncared for aspects that maybe are for injuries from the childhood. And obviously if they get too dark, you need to get some support from somebody who knows what they're doing. But, you know, there are these sad places in ourselves which we really need to just parent, you know, be the parent for yourself, because your parents sometimes had so much going on, they weren't able to be that nourishing, loving, listening. So, okay, when your little daughter comes in, she's crying and you look, darling, I'm busy, I've just got to get this done. But that little thing she's got to talk to you about is so big. So in a way, I look at those parts of myself as the children within me that still need that mothering or that support. If you're having really deep, dark feelings of, you know, possible suicide or just you can't get out of these dark spaces, it's really lovely to find a counsellor. And I say a counsellor because they're people who like to listen, you know. And if it's very serious that you feel really, really frightened about what you're feeling, then you should go and see a psychologist and a psychiatrist, because maybe you need the support of something medical. But basically, if you get a good counsellor and they help you learn how to parent or to partner, make a partnership with those parts of yourself, you'll get through it and it will become something that you learn to live with and work with, like me. You know, I used to wake up with dread, absolute dread, fear. And that was a lot of years ago, and I just worked with that and I feel good. So it is possible to work those things out.
Yeah. And there's, I think you probably have in the UK, for those who are there, I know here in Australia we have helplines and things which, you know, if you just need to talk to someone else asked a question, what if you don't have friends that you can talk to? These people who are on those helplines are genuinely, deeply good-hearted, generous people who go through training as well. But they're available. They, you know, a life without giving to others, you know, is a life that is, you know, has a capacity to go into those traumatized moments. So anyway, giving to others is important. I think gratitude and appreciation when you can, you know, when you're feeling good, go into being as appreciative of that as possible. And the pattern of appreciation of the smallest things, that when the darkness starts to come, because it doesn't just come in one big lump, it starts, you know, the light starts to kind of ebb away and the darkness starts to come. It's like in that moment, this is why it's so important to be the witness of your own mind and energy field, so that you know you can intervene before it becomes completely that you take it, you know, this friend who tends to melancholy or tends to depression type energy inside you, and you befriend them before they go down. But that appreciation of life and appreciation of, you know, small aspects of beauty, that pattern can become as strong or stronger than the pattern of going down. So I think self-awareness is fundamental in all of this, because there is a window before the night, you know, where you can come in.
And I want to add to that, Cassie, that's so true. And you know, I think some great person, I can't remember their name, said you can't fix a problem with the thing that created the problem. So there's no use you just being afraid and sitting in your own little world and not taking a different way of dealing with it. You, in a way, you have to reach out to yourself and you have to do something differently. Yeah. So whether if you're really shy and you don't want to go out with people, then research, go on the web and research different beautiful tools. But my thing is talk to somebody. And if you don't have friends, you know, you can make friends. You can slowly harvest one of your friends and just experiment and see whether they like talking about the inside world as much as you do or need to. Just ask them and say, what do you think about mental health and how do you cope? Ask the question and see what happens. And if they don't, then, you know, find a kind of yoga group and then you'll meet someone in the yoga group who will, or find something, go and try something where you'll meet those people, because there's no use just staying in your own world, sitting in the soup of what is. You got to move it.
Yeah.
The next question. I've tried many of the things and do all the usual well-being things like eating healthily, practicing meditation, keeping a gratitude diary, exercise and volunteering, but still sometimes I'm really struggling with the whole thing. Any insights? What have you done when you found yourself feeling like it's a bit of a mountain?
Well, again, I sound like an old record. I went and got help because, as I said before, you can't change the problem with the same stuff. You have to get new input. And as Carolyn said, she often goes the body route because that's the way, you know, she's connected to herself. I need to sort of talk it out. I need someone to listen. I need someone who's cleverer than me to help me shift and view a situation from another angle. I think the whole thing is sometimes we're so afraid to reveal ourselves to someone because we feel silly or we feel stupid. But actually, if you go to a therapist, this is what they love to talk about. This is what they love to sort of be with people. They really enjoy it, and they feel so much respect for anybody who knocks on their door. So I would say try something that is not in your control, where you're not the one who's managing it. Hand it over to someone who's experienced. That's the only thing, but Carolyn might be able to talk to that.
Not really. I think the only thing I would say is that some days you don't have good days, you know, and one of the things that I've learned over the last, especially the last couple of years, is not to judge that as being wrong. You know, if it's not a fabulous day today and I don't feel all perky and terrific, well, it just is what it is, you know, and that's okay, but it's not forever. And do kind things for myself, you know, I think it's all okay if it's dark and it's overwhelming and those, you know, there's a strong pattern. But otherwise, I think life is not always necessarily for everyone Disney World. You know, it's okay that there's some ebb and flow. And that I've found that the less that I have this, expectation that I should always be on and up, the better it is, really. I, you know, somehow the expectation somehow is a blocker to actually things flowing and moving on. You know, the expectation and judgment and self-criticism that it shouldn't be like this. Well, it just is. Let me move on, and then it moves, the energy shifts. So I think those sorts of things are really helpful to, you know, check your expectations and be more kind. I think that for me, that was the biggest shift in my world, when I stopped being self-critical and I started to be kind. It was not always easy because the habit was really strong to be hypercritical. But then I be kind, I speak kindly with myself. I have a nice name for this, you know, one who I would call pathetic previously. Don't be so pathetic. I'd start speaking kindly, like this was a lost child, you know, or something. And that just shifted everything, absolutely everything for me. Shifted the way I was with others as well. And yeah.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, I had a friend, a male friend, who had battled depression all his life. And later on in his life, he took a chance and went to a therapist, and absolutely he's experiencing enormous shift, enormous joy, and he's having insight into the way his operating system kept him in sadness, really. So, you know, but I agree with Cassie, you know, everyone has a lot of shame and expectation around feelings. Sometimes, you know, that resilience of accepting and managing a down period is good. It's good for us to get that kind of resilience. But again, if it's a battle, and if you feel suicidal, or if you feel really this is overwhelming, you have to step outside of yourself and get, just like you'd go to the doctor to get rid of an infection, you've got to go to somebody who knows how to help deal with those internal injuries. It's just mental health. It's not bad.
Thank you. So here's the next question. How do you give a person who is down self-awareness? Do you give them self-awareness?
No, I think if you want to be a good friend, learn a little bit about how to listen well. And I still have to teach myself that with my friends. But if you really listen well and know how to ask a question. So I'll give you an example. Let's do a little role play, Cassie. So you tell me something that, you know, you're having a rough day. Tell me about it.
Okay. So I'm trying to get something done at work and it's not flowing. I've tried this over and over and over, and I'm just ready to give up because I'm pushing through. I'm having a go. I'm doing my best. I'm investing money. I'm investing time, and it's just overwhelming and I can't understand why it's not working.
Oh, Cassie,
but it's traumatizing. It's like intense.
Yeah. That sounds rough. So how long have you been doing it?
a year and a half.
Oh, wow. That is a long time.
Yeah.
Is there anything I can do to support you?
Not really, because it's technological.
Oh, God, I definitely can't help you there. Yeah, that sounds pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, it's bad, but it's not like the end of the world. Sometimes I think I just have to stop, give up, because it's not flowing, it's not moving, I don't know what to do.
So you want to give up?
Well, I don't want to, but I feel like maybe I should, because maybe that's the message. It's not working.
Oh, geez. I've seen you, you know, work so well in these challenges. You know, so listening, I started to give advice there, but, you know, you can learn skills on how to be a good listener with your friends.
So that was really interesting when you repeated back to me, I saw you want to give up. I go, no. You know, like this voice inside me went, no, I don't want to give up. You know, so it was like, that was helpful rather than telling me don't give up, because then I would have reacted against that.
That's right. So you can do these. There's some simple things online that you can explore, how to listen. And when someone tells you stuff, if you just repeat back, oh, so you're finding it really tough, that's really helpful. You know, don't be the answers to the questions. Just be the one who can help listen well. So that's how you can become a good friend. But, you know, everything's online, or you can read books, or you can even actually go and do a really quick little course in counselling, which is really useful. It helps with children as well.
There's heaps and heaps of free courses online, you know. It's just amazing what's available. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to ask both of you, how did you start to develop kindness towards yourselves?
For me, I was sharing a house with a friend who'd been on this journey for a long time, and he was, it was New Year's Eve and neither of us went out this New Year's Eve, and we were sharing about our year that had been, and I started to talk about like from that self-critical point of view, I hadn't really achieved enough. I hadn't really changed anything in myself. I was like really hard taskmaster. And I started to get really sad and kind of go down that melancholic track, you know, and like lament. And as I started, and I, you know, a little tear starting to run down my face, and I looked across the other side sofa where this friend was sitting, and he was implacable. There was no shift. There was no, in my mind, I needed, you know, someone to go, oh, Kaz, you know, and nothing. It was just emptiness, nothing coming back at me. And he just sat there and he said, I don't understand why you do this to yourself. And I was like, what? He said, look, you're such a great soul. He said, as a strategy, if it worked and it was helpful to make you feel better, fine, but clearly it's not working. And it was just a shock for me in that moment that I went, this is a strategy, like the operating system, right? It's a strategy for something. I clearly was trying to get some compassion and or some, you know, feeling I wasn't giving to myself, trying to get it from someone else. And he was like, it's not working for you. And in that moment, I went, I have to stop this. So it was just one of those, and those moments come to us in our life where you just go, okay, enough's enough. I've got to find another way. And from that point on, I committed to being kind. And it was a bit of a road to get there because, you know, that big, heavy critic inside it can still come up. And I have to, you know, tame it. It's a beast. It's really, I've got a big one. It's a beast and I've got to tame it. And so the practice of kindness when it's not around is really important to create a beautiful garden inside, an amazing life, so I can feel what it feels like being lovely and kind with myself, so that when that vile creature shows up, it's not vile, it's needy, whatever it is, I can choose because I've got enough currency of kindness sitting there that I go, you know what? I don't buy that anymore. But practice, it's a practice.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I can use that little example of the dyslexic. You know, I realized that because I was dyslexic and had to hide it, every time I tried to go for a job and fill out a form, I'd had to hide, I became a tough nut, you know. So people, maybe I even scared people because I had to create such a shield against hiding this very embarrassing thing that I can't spell and I'm not a great reader. And I realized at that point, wow, I actually transmogrified my character, who I actually come across as, just to hide this problem. Who would I be like without all those defenses of hiding it? And I'm actually quite a gentle, sensitive sort of person. I'm actually not a toughy. I'm not that sort of person who likes to be aggressive. But I became that to sort of hide so much. Yeah. So I think you dismantle a lot of things that aren't necessary when you start to be brave to explore who you really are and what you'd really like. That's one thing that happens when you start to be kind to yourself and ask those big questions, who am I really? It's a delightful experience.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. And earlier in the talk, you talked about rejection and how you would reject people before they rejected you. Mm. Again, is there something that I can start to do that will change that for me?
It's such a deep topic in a sense. Because I, if we go back to the very beginning again, where we talked about that everything is within us, and in some ways the world outside of us is a mirror of, in the same way, you know, if I'm feeling depressed or down, my house can get really messy because I don't care about me. I don't care about my house. I don't do the washing up. I mean, my clothes, I don't hang, put away. So my external environment is a reflection of my inner environment. So if I'm rejecting things and people outside of me, I'm bound to be rejecting aspects of myself. And so for me, that's a good place to start. How do I, you know, like when I said before, this vile creature, I went, oh, I'm thinking that about that. I can't think like that about some aspect of myself. Always, even the darkest, the meanest, the most, you know, if you like, the least lovely aspects of myself are trying to do something good. It's a strategy. So I can't reject those parts of myself either. I don't have to give them the power to run my life, but I can't reject them. Because there's a saying my dad told me once, which I think comes from Gestalt or something, those aspects of that which you reject will rise up and become hostile. So it's a bit like you were saying, Pammy, you know, you become hostile if you don't embrace something. And and so the idea of, you know, I liked what you said before about giving it a name, but not a horrible name. So this, you know, it could be Rachel, could be my sister has one. She's got this part of her, Ellen, who becomes like this hyper kind of critical person around control and money. And she's really flexible and relaxed, but Ellen comes and shows up. So she's got this name Ellen, which is really helpful because it's a real thing, but it's then manageable. So Ellen, you're not going to have control over this. So I think stop rejecting aspects of ourselves, learn how to embrace them, be kinder, more loving, and then the external world will be a kind of somehow a reflection of that as well. I'll start to be more able to embrace others that are different from me or that I feel are going to reject me and just let people be. Pamela?
No, yeah, I agree. What happened? Am I not here?
I'm just wondering if you've got something else to add.
Oh, no, I'm loving listening. Yeah, I agree.
Thank you. Thank you. There is one final question, and I promise to let you go after this one, okay? The question is this. The person likes to keep informed of what's happening in the world, but there's so much bad news and people hurting each other and the stories that we're hearing from Burma or Myanmar at the moment are pretty shocking. Should she just stop listening to the news?
I don't. I put those people in my prayer, in my meditations for sure. That's one hell of a courage to stand up to your own government if the government is being so bad. So in my meditations, I send, because I listen to Al Jazeera news in the morning, because that's a really good news because it gives you what's going on in the world. But of course, I don't re-traumatize myself with a lot of bad news. I see what's going on, and then I send my strong feelings of support to anyone who's suffering and having courage to try and make their world better. But, you know, I don't re-traumatize myself with it. I don't watch it all day, every day. I just like to know what's going on in the world. And I don't watch commercial stations. I watch, you know, stations that have good journalism.
Caroline?
I'm a little different because 30 years ago when my husband had cancer, one of the things that the doctors that we were working with, the physician said, and they were very enlightened, you better to take as much negativity out of your life as possible, including don't watch the news. And it was during the time of the Gulf War, leading into the Gulf War. So it was full of negative stuff all the time. And so we just completely stopped watching the news, buying newspapers at the time. They were in paper form more than anything. There wasn't much online. So we just stopped. And I never went back to it after he died, because I found that sometimes I'm a bit ignorant, because someone will talk about, oh, all that stuff that's going on. I go, what stuff? And I am a little ignorant sometimes in that. But in 30 years, I think it served me more to not ingest. And I do a thing which is I give permission, a little bit like what Pamela said. I give permission to intelligent news source that is not going to be simply sensationalizing heavy news, but I give permission to certain news sources to inform me from time to time. And they've got to be able to tell a bigger story too, not just sensationalize what's wrong. They give more context. And then, as Pamela said as well, if there is something terrible that's happening, then I use my power of prayer or meditation to focus sending, you know, good energy, because one, it's helpful for me, and I believe it does get to them, but it transforms what is heavy and negative into something that can be beautiful and connecting. So yeah, I would say similar things.
Wow. Great. Thank you very much. I now need to just give you a tiny bit of feedback. There's been so much feedback of excellent conversations, very interesting, very helpful questions and comments, wonderful training, and great detail on healing offered. So lots of thank yous. Amazing, because you've helped maintain or restore faith in humanity. So that's another one. And it goes on and on and on with lots of thank yous, and for your sharing, for being so open and honest with us. I think it's touched all of us at this end of the world. So thank you very, very much. And just to quote somebody earlier, you ladies rock. So thank you everyone very much, and we look forward to being with you again. Pamela, Caroline, you will hear me knocking on your doors again, I'm sure. So thank you.
Thanks, Artie. Thanks, you're so lovely.
Take care.
Bye. Bye, everyone. Take care.
Bye, everyone. Yes, bye. Take care. Bye.